Weeks later found Frank in the copper and gold mining town of Butte. The town was wide open and roaring, with dozens of saloons open around the clock. Painted-up soiled doves hung out of windows above the saloons and in homes with red lanterns on the front porch, inviting any and all to sample their wares. Frank camped on the edge of town. There were no hotel rooms to be had at any price. That was all right with Frank. He didn't plan to spend much time in the town, just long enough to buy supplies, then get away from all the smoke, noise, hustle, and bustle of too damn many people. Frank found a couple of very nice families who were opening businesses in Butte. Due to the housing shortage, both families were living in and under their wagons until houses could be built for them. The women and kids agreed to look after Wolf while Frank went into town for a bath, a haircut, and supplies.
And new boots.
His old boots were coming apart on his feet. Frank decided to treat himself to a new pair and a new hat as well.
Might as well. I can afford it.
Frank bought his supplies, told the clerk he'd be back for them, then toted a sack full of dirty clothes over to a laundry. He got himself a shave, a haircut, and a bath, dressed in clean long handles, jeans, and shirt, then went in search of a boot and hat shop. He bought new boots and a new Stetson. He felt like a brand new man as he walked over to a saloon to have a drink before he found a cafe to get something to eat. The saloon had plenty of customers, but there was room at the log bar. Frank bellied up and ordered a whiskey, his first whiskey in weeks, and listened to the gossip around him. It was mostly about mining, and Frank paid no attention.
I heard some big rancher down some south and east here run Frank Morgan out.
Frank perked up and listened.
Do tell.
Yes, sir, he did. Man by the name of Colonel Trainer runs a Circle Snake spread. Made old Frank Morgan tuck his tail between his legs and run, he did.
Where'd you hear that?
Some cowboy passing through yesterday. Seems this Trainer fella's hiring guns for his spread. Paying big money, too. Gonna run all the farmers and sheep herders out of the valley.
Hard to believe Frank Morgan will run from anybody.
Well, hell. Frank's getting old, I reckon.
About 45, so I understand from an article I read once. That ain't old.
Maybe he just lost his nerve. It happens, you know.
Frank smiled into his shot glass. The rumor came as no surprise to him. A very few others, like Trainer, full of arrogance and self-importance, laid those remarks on Frank in the past. Frank always ignored them. But this time, the charge of cowardice rankled in him. Perhaps it was because he took such an instant dislike to Colonel Trainer.
I'd like to run into that damn Morgan.
Oh, hell, Rob. What do you think you'd do if you see him? You think maybe crowd him into a fight?
Damn right I would. Tired of reading all them books and newspaper stories about him. I want to see firsthand if he's got the backbone to face a really fast gun.
Like you, Rob?
Yes, sir. Just like me. I'm the fastest gun in these parts, and you all know it. Anybody here want to say I ain't?
Frank was hemmed in by the crowd at the other end of the bar. If he tried to leave, this punk Rob might recognize him and call his hand. Frank decided to nurse his drink and try to blend in with the crowd around him.
Ain't nobody calling you nothing, Rob. We're just trying to relax and have a drink, that's all.
Fine. Give me another beer, Jake.
Coming right up, Rob. Keep your pants on.
Yeah, you do that!
Who said that?
The crowd was gonna make this fellow mad, and that was the wrong thing to do at this time. Frank took a tiny sip of his drink. The barkeep slid a foamy mug of beer down the bar toward Rob.
I wonder how much this Trainer guy is paying. If the money's right, I might take me a ride down there and sign on.
And you're not gonna run into Frank Morgan, Rob. Not if this Trainer run him off.
Hell, Frank Morgan's probably in Texas by now, running like a scared rabbit.
I wouldn't count on that, boy.
Oh? Well, how come you say that?
Morgan ain't never run from no one in his life, that's how come. This Colonel Trainer's just blowing smoke, that's all.
You know Frank Morgan?
I've seen him a time or two, yeah.
What's he look like? Raggedy and gray-headed and probably a damn drunk, too?
I wouldn't say that. But was I you, I'd back off with the mouth some. Frank just might hear about your comments and come here and make you eat them.
Huh? If he ever comes to Butte, I kick his ass from one end of town to the other.
I'd give $100 to see you try that, Rob.
I wouldn't try. I'd do it. By God, I would! Stupid horse-ass fucking dirty miners. If I ever run into Morgan, I'll show all of you. I swear I will.
Frank waved to the bartender for another shot of whiskey. The barkeep walked down, filled his glass, and then locked eyes with Frank. His mouth dropped open as his eyes widened with sudden recognition.
Jesus Christ.
Keep it to yourself. I'm not looking for any trouble.
But his words came too late. Jake stepped back and stared at the West's most famous gunfighter for a few seconds.
My God, boys, it's him. He's here right in this saloon.
Who's here?
Who's him?
Frank Morgan, standing right in front of me at this bar.
The men on both sides of Frank suddenly moved to one side in a hurry. The men standing by Rob did the same. Only the long, empty expanse of bar was now between the gunfighter and the big mouth. Frank sipped his whiskey and stared straight ahead.
Well, there he is, Rob. Poor old gray-headed, raggedy Frank Morgan. Are you drunk and shaking in your boots, Mr. Morgan?
Not likely.
Well, I think you're a coward. What do you think about that, Morgan?
I think you ought to run back home and get your mama to change your diaper and tuck you into bed. Either that, or shut your goddamn flapping mouth.
Now you hold it right there, Morgan.
Or you'll do what?
I'll have to deal hard with you, that's what.
All right, Rob. Shuffle the cards and deal.
I mean it, Morgan.
Is that really Frank Morgan?
Damn sure is. Now shut up.
I don't want to have to hurt you, Morgan. But by God, I will. I will if you don't hold it right there.
I'd hate for you to try to hurt me, Rob. Because if you try that, I'm going to take those guns off you and beat you half to death with them.
I'd like to see that.
Rob was scared and sweating. Frank Morgan didn't look like anything Rob imagined he would. Frank Morgan looked big and powerful and just plain mean.
Take off those guns, boy.
Do what?
I said take off those guns. Lay them on the bar and walk out of here.
I ain't gonna do no damn such thing.
You're mighty young to have to die.
Die? No, not me, Morgan. You don't stop pushing me, I'm gonna have to draw on you. I mean it.
I hope you don't drag iron on me, Rob, because if you do, it's gonna be the last thing you do on Earth. Now take off those guns and lay them on the bar.
You go to hell, Morgan! Morgan, stop it!
Think about death, boy. Give it some hard thought. Dead is forever, boy. You realize that?
You're the one who's gonna be dead, Morgan. I'm fast, man. I'm the fastest gun slick in this part of Montana.
But you're not fast enough, Rob. Believe me, you're not.
I don't think the boy's got enough grit in his craw to jerk iron.
Shut up, unless you want to step up here and take Rob's place.
Now, you just hold on.
Rob's face glistened white as a cue ball, drenched in sweat. Frank backed the young would-be gunfighter up against the wall.
What? Why are you doing this to me? I ain't never done you no hurt.
Frank reached down and tore the gun belt from Rob's waist. Jerking so hard, he broke the buckle. He tossed the rig onto the bar.
You put gunfighting out of your mind, boy. You're not a gun hand. Never will be. That's a good thing. You'll live a lot longer. Shut up and listen to me. You go be a cowboy or a farmer or run a store or sell ladies' corsets or men's hats. But you put gun handling out of your mind. You hear me?
Yes, sir.
You come back in here tomorrow, sometime after I'm gone, and pick up your guns and sell them or store them away in a trunk. But don't wear them. Somebody will kill you if you do. Understand?
Yes, sir.
Fine. Now get out of here.
Rob hit the boards without looking back. Frank walked back down the bar and picked up his drink as the patrons returned to their raucous activities.
Good advice you give that young feller, Mr. Morgan. His smart mouth was sure gonna get him hurt.
He'll be all right, as long as he leaves those guns alone.
You gonna be in town long?
I'll be pulling out come the morning.
Why didn't you just kill the loudmouth, Morgan?
Because it wasn't necessary.
Too bad. I wanted to see just how fast you are.
Frank ignored the man and turned back to the bar, picking up his drink and taking a sip. But he picked up the shot glass with his left hand, leaving his right hand free. There was something troubling in the man's voice. Frank had a hunch the man just might be looking for trouble. Behind him, Frank heard the sounds of chairs scraping back. He finished his drink and set the empty glass on the bar.
Turn around, Morgan.
I can hear you.
I said turn around, you bastard.
Frank turned around. The man was standing up, facing him, maybe 30 feet away. He was dressed all in black. The men seated at tables close by moved.
You have a problem with me, Mr. State It. Don't call me names.
Yeah, I got a problem, Morgan. And I'll call you anything I damn well please.
Mister, you're about to buy into a high-stakes game here, and I don't know why. You want to tell me?
You know.
No, I don't know, mister. If I knew, I wouldn't have asked.
You and me, we got a debt between us.
I owe you money? I don't think so.
You owe me a life.
How do you figure that?
My older brother.
You're not giving me much to go on. What's his name?
His name was Guy. Guy Perkins.
I don't recall ever meeting anyone by that name.
I guess you don't, since you shot him down in cold blood.
You want to explain that?
It was in Arizona, down along the border, at a trading post near Fort Huachuca.
I was there years ago. I don't recall any trouble. You sure you got the right man?
I'm sure.
You got the wrong man, mister.
Time for you to pay for killing my brother, Morgan. I've been looking all over for you for years. Now you pay your debt.
Frank suddenly was weary of the talk. People wrongly blamed him for 100 deaths over the years, probably more than that. It was possible this man in black didn't even have a brother. He was just looking for a name.
You ready, Morgan?
I guess so. I'm not looking forward to killing a man for no good reason.
Killed my brother, damn you!
I don't think so. I think you're just a damn fool, looking to make a name for himself. Well, I'm not gonna draw on you.
Stand real still, mister. You, all dressed in black. Don't move a muscle or I'll cut you in half with this shotgun.
Frank shifted his gaze for just a second. A man wearing a badge on his shirt was standing near the bat wings, a sawed-off shotgun in his hand, the barrels pointed at the man in black.
I ain't done nothing, Marshal.
You're just about to get yourself killed, that's what you're about to do. And if that's what you want to do, go somewhere else to do it.
This bastard killed my brother, Marshal.
Did you, Morgan?
Not to my knowledge.
Well, that's good enough for me. You take off that gun belt, mister. Lay it on the table.
The hell I will.
You'll be dead if you don't.
What now, Marshal?
Back up, away from the table. All the way to the back of the saloon. Then you sit down, both hands on the table.
The man backed up and carefully made his way to the rear of the saloon. He sat down and put both hands on the table.
Now you stay there. How long are you going to be in town, Morgan?
I plan on pulling out first thing in the morning, Marshal.
Good. I'll make sure that young punk Rob and this stranger here don't follow you out.
I appreciate that. Rob's guns are over there on the bar.
They can stay there until they rust, as far as I'm concerned.
That would be best, Marshal. I'm going. Thanks for your help.
Don't mention it. Have a good trip.
Frank walked out of the saloon and headed for the general store. He picked up his supplies and carried them to the livery, telling the liveryman to keep an eye on them. The woman who ran the laundry said his clothes wouldn't be ready for several more hours. Frank walked over to a cafe, had a good meal, lingering long over several cups of coffee. The news Frank Morgan was in town spread fast. Dozens of people walked past the cafe for a look-see at the famous gunfighter. Then Frank went back to the livery. The crowds of curious followed him over there.
The hell with this.
Frank finally got tired of it and went back to the general store, bought a couple of new outfits, and rode out of town, avoiding the main street as he did. Early the next morning, he left Butte for good, just wandering. A month later, Frank was on the Montana-Wyoming border buying coffee and bacon at a general store in a tiny town. He wasn't certain if he was in Montana or Wyoming and wasn't interested enough to ask. Frank's appearance was rough after a month on the trail. He was dusty and hadn't shaved for several days. He looked like a drifting, out-of-work puncher.
Heading up northaways, are you?
Beg pardon?
Oh, I'm told several ranchers up north and westaways is hiring men. Thought you might be heading that way, that's all.
I'm just drifting, no place in particular in mind.
Oh, seeing the country, are you?
That's right.
Well, if you're not looking for work, I'd fight shy of that area I mentioned. Gonna be trouble aplenty up there for long.
Oh.
Yep. Ranchers and farmers.
Where is this place?
North and some west of here. Two towns named Heaven and Hell. Farmer's town is called Heaven. Rancher's town is Hell. It'd be funny if people weren't getting killed.
Who's winning the fight so far?
Oh, no one yet. But the farmers will lose, you can bet on that.
Law's on their side, isn't it?
Law? No law up there to speak of. The county sheriff is 50 or 75 miles away, and he's probably in this Colonel Trainer's pocket. Trainer owns the Circle Snake brand. Big money man. He's hiring any man who wants to make some good money and ain't particular how he uses his gun.
Sounds like a good place to stay clear of.
Well, you bet it is.
Frank paid for his supplies.
Where's the nearest telegraph office?
About 25 miles north of here. Just follow this road. Take you right to it.
Is there a hotel in that town?
Oh, rooms for rent over the saloon is all.
That'll do. Thanks.
Frank was headed north. He had some wires to send to his attorneys in Denver. He had an idea, too. He was tired of drifting. Maybe Heaven would be a good place to settle down after all. Frank reined up at the burned-out ruins of the Jefferson place and swung down from the saddle. He stretched for a moment, then walked around.
Well, Wolf, what do you think about it? I think it'll be a right nice place once we get the cabin up. You want to stay here or ride into town with me?
Wolf walked to the shed out back of the house and lay down.
Guess that answers that. I'll get you a pail of water before I go.
Frank found an old bucket and filled it with water from the well. The corral was still up. Frank made sure the water trough had water in it, then put his pack horse in the corral. He pulled several handfuls of grass and hand-fed the pack horse.
I'll bring you back some hay, girl, if I can arrange for a wagon and team, that is. If not, I'll bring a bag of oats.
Frank walked over to the shed.
Stay put, Wolf. I mean it, boy. Stay put.
Frank rode toward the town of Heaven. He had already been to the county seat and signed all the papers his lawyers sent to a lawyer there. The old Jefferson place was his. Hundreds of acres of prime farm and grazing land, with good water aplenty. Just to be ornery about it, and to be perfectly honest, further irritate Trainer, Frank bought several hundred acres both east and west of his new property. As he approached the cutoff to the Wilson farm, a wagon came rattling out, driven by Julie, with a young girl, maybe eight or so, sitting beside her. Frank caught up with the wagon and Julie reined up.
Mr. Morgan, I thought I would never see you again.
Like a bad penny, Miss Julie, I came back.
I'm so glad you did. I guess you haven't heard what happened since you've been gone, have you?
Just the Trainer's hiring a lot of gun hands.
Phil was killed about a week after you left.
Phil? Your husband?
Yes.
How?
A couple of snake riders goaded him into a fight. One of them knocked him down and Phil hit his head on a rock. His skull was fractured. He died a few days later. He never regained consciousness.
I'm sorry. What happened to the snake riders?
Nothing. Both of Trainer's men said Phil started the fight and they were only protecting themselves. Which is a lie, of course, but the county sheriff is in Trainer's pocket.
Are you making out all right?
I guess. I hired a fellow to help bring in the crops this fall. Phil Jr., Katie, and I can work the garden and put up the vegetables.
How about the cattle Phil was running?
They've been pretty much on their own, I'm sorry to say.
I can take care of them, since we're gonna be neighbors.
Neighbors?
I bought the Jefferson place.
Frank! Oh, that's wonderful!
I think it's a good investment.
Well, you can come over for dinner, then.
I'd like that, Julie. Sure would.
How about sometime this week?
That'd be fine. Come on, I'll ride with you into town. But first, who's that beautiful young lady sitting next to you?
This is my youngest, Shelley. This is Mr. Morgan, baby.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Shelley. Tell you what, when we get to town, I'll buy you some candy and a sarsaparilla. Would you like that?
Yes, sir.
Frank rode alongside the wagon to town, he and Julie chatting. Julie brought him up to date on all that had happened during his several months' absence.
Colonel Trainer and Don Bullard, he owns the Diamond 45, and Ken Gilmar, he owns the Lightning Spread, have been hiring gunfighters. They say they're cowboys, but everyone knows they're not. Trainer has about 30 new men now working for him, and the others have hired about 20 each.
That's in addition to their regular hands?
Yes.
That's costing them a lot of money each month. How can they afford it?
They're all rich men. All of them have stock in the mines up in Butte, and they're making more money than they know what to do with.
And Phil is sweet on Betty Lou Gilmer, and Katie's stock on Donnie Bullard.
You hush now.
But it's true, Mama.
That don't make no never mind. Just be quiet about it.
Yes, ma'am.
Are there good carpenters in town?
Oh, yes, several of them. They do good work.
I'll need them. I can do rough work, but I'm no skilled house builder.
Phil Jr. can help. He used to help Daddy build things.
Oh, he can't do much.
Anything would be a help. I'd sure pay him.
I'll tell him. He needs to be around a man who will make him watch his P's and Q's.
Well, I'm not much good at that. Don't have any experience with kids.
You were never married, Frank?
Yeah, I was, right after the war. But we separated before my son was born. I didn't even know I had a son until last year. He doesn't have much use for me, I'm afraid.
Well, that's sad.
It's life, Julie. You gotta be ready for the thorns, along with the roses.
You have a poetic streak in you, Frank.
First time anyone ever said that to me.
Shelley turned at the sound of several men riding up behind them.
Mama, it's that awful Wells Langford and his men.
Who's Wells Langford?
The Diamond 45 foreman. He's killed several men in gunfights. He's a really dreadful person.
And the men with him?
I don't know them.
The Diamond 45 hands reined up alongside Frank in the wagon.
You got a new hand, Mrs. Wilson?
Wells gave Frank a quick visual once over. From the expression on his face, he didn't much like what he saw.
A friend of mine, Mr. Langford.
Where did you come from? And who the hell are you?
Watch your mouth around the ladies.
You'll do what, mister?
Close it for you.
You must think you're really something, cowboy.
He is. That's Frank Morgan, Wells.
Frank cut his eyes to the hand who identified him. He knew him. A bad one who went by the name of Davis.
I haven't seen you in a long time, Davis.
About 5 years or so, Morgan. Since that night you killed my saddle part down in Colorado.
He needed killing.
He shouldn't have braced you, that's a fact, and you didn't start it. But he had a few drinks too many.
That's no excuse, Davis.
I thought Colonel Trainer told you to get out of this area and stay out, Morgan.
I don't take orders from Trainer, or from anyone else for that matter.
What brought you back, Morgan?
I like the people. Those that live in the south end of the valleys, that is.
These valleys belong to the ranchers, Morgan, and that's a hard fact.
That's nonsense, Langford. Courts have said as much. The farmers are here to stay, and you better get used to it.
When hell freezes over, Morgan.
Hell can't freeze. It's too hot down there.
Let's get to town, boys.
The men rode ahead, leaving a cloud of dust behind them. Julie and Shelley fanned themselves until the dust cloud dissipated.
I do not like that man.
I can certainly see why. Let's get to town, ladies. I'll buy you both the sarsaparilla.
When the wagon, with Frank riding alongside, rolled into town, a lot of heads turned to gawk and whisper.
The rumor mill has started.
Let them talk. It'll take their minds off the big trouble.
Frank reined up in front of the store and went inside, while Julie pulled around to the rear of the general store and backed the wagon up to the loading dock. He bought Shelley some hard candy and a bottle of sarsaparilla, and then went in search of a wagon and team he could rent or buy. He found a wagon and team at the livery and arranged for its purchase.
Get the team into harness and I'll be back.
Will do, Mr. Morgan. Welcome back.
Frank walked over to the general store and started buying the basic supplies he figured he'd need until the house was built. Then he went to the bank and deposited several large bank drafts. Frank was suddenly Mr. Morgan to banker Simmons. He then went looking for the carpenters Julie mentioned. After speaking with them, he set up a line of credit at the sawmill.
You are going to farm, Mr. Morgan?
Well, since you have the sawmill business cornered, I figure I'll plant some wheat, corn, and oats for starters.
Well, you'll need farming implements.
When the time comes, I'll get them.
And a good mule or two.
I'm sure you'll be able to get them for me.
You just say the word.
Smiling, Frank went back to the general store to check on Julie and Shelley. He wanted to convoy back with them. It seemed to him they were looking at every item in the store and buying very little. Julie said they'd be ready to go in about an hour. Frank walked over to the saloon to listen to the gossip. He wasn't in the mood for hard liquor or a beer, so he ordered coffee. The Diamond 45 crew was there, sprawled all around two tables, half-heartedly playing penny-ante poker. Frank ignored them.
Well, the famous Frank Morgan. Gonna be a sidebuster now. You gonna raise sheep too, Morgan? I'm talking to you, Morgan.
Frank knew he should just walk away from this, but running away didn't set well with Frank Morgan. He set his coffee cup on the bar and turned around to face the Diamond 45 crew.
What brings you boys to this end of the valley, Langford?
It's a free country, Morgan, ain't it?
So I'm told.
Besides, we like to come down here. It's a nice, friendly town.
Unlike the town at the north end.
There ain't nothing wrong with hell.
I bet the preachers in your town would disagree with that, Wells.
There ain't no preachers in hell, Frank. They got an empty church, and that's all. They can't get a preacher to come to hell.
I wonder why. Could it be the name?
You shut your damn mouth, farmer.
Why should he, Wells? Didn't you just say it's a free country? This is his town. You boys are just visiting here. I doubt you were invited.
You telling us to get out, Morgan?
Nope. As you say, it's a free country. You don't see any badge on me, do you? I'm just a private citizen.
Nobody runs us out of nowhere, Morgan. Especially you.
I don't recall anyone asking you to leave, Davis.
Just making things plain.
Tell me this, Wells. Why do you boys want to come to a place where you know you're not welcome?
I think you know the answer to that.
Yeah, I suppose I do. So you can strut around and shoot anybody who dares challenge you. Right, Wells? Now let me add this. I just bought the old Jefferson place. Place where night riders burned the whole family to death a few months back. I bought land surrounding the place, too. If I find any of you Diamond 45 people or Circle Snake riders or Lightning Hands on my property, I'll kill you. I won't ask questions before I do it. I'll just blow you out of the saddle and leave you for the buzzards and the bears. You understand all that?
Wells' eyes bugged out and his face flushed from sudden rage. His hands gripped both arms of the chair until the knuckles turned white.
It's hard talk, Morgan.
You're damn right it is. And I mean every word of it. I'm no helpless woman or child, or a man who isn't used to guns. And if you doubt it, stand up. Get ready to drag iron.
Wells slowly relaxed and leaned back in the chair, being careful to keep his hands away from his pistol.
You'd like that, wouldn't you, Drifter?
I'm no drifter anymore, Wells. I own a farm and a small ranch. And I'm also looking after the cattle that belong to the Wilson family. Same rules apply to the Wilson property.
That's mighty nice of you, Morgan. You lifting the skirt to that fine-looking woman for payment, huh? She give you a good roll in bed for all your help?
Frank was away from the bar in a heartbeat. He reached the mouthy cowboy in the next heartbeat, just as the man was getting to his boots, both hands balled into fists.
Finish him, Court!
Frank hit Court in the mouth with one big fist. Court's boots flew out from under him, and he landed on the table behind where he'd been sitting. He rolled and got to his feet, his lips dripping blood.
I'll kill you for that, Drifter.
Come and do it.
Court charged him, and Frank met him square on with both fists, a series of lefts and rights to the stomach and face that sent Court stumbling backward. Frank pressed the arrogant ranch hand hard, hitting him solidly on the side of the jaw with a right fist that glazed the man's eyes and caused his knees to buckle a bit. Court backed up, shaking his head and spitting out blood.
You son of a bitch!
Court swung at Frank. Frank grabbed the man's arm just at the wrist and, using his forward momentum, threw the man out one of the front windows of the saloon. Court bounced on the boardwalk and rolled off into the dirt of the street. Frank was out the bat wings after him before Court could get up and get his shaky legs under him. The Diamond 45 hand was bleeding from a dozen cuts from the broken glass, but he was still game. He tried to climb up on the boardwalk. He didn't make it. Frank kicked him in the belly, and Court doubled over and went to the ground, both hands holding his belly. Frank stepped off the boardwalk, and then for the next several minutes, methodically beat the man to a bloody pulp. When he finished, Court was unconscious, his face torn, bloody, and unrecognizable. The Diamond 45 flunky was slumped against a water trough, his chin resting on his chest. Incredibly, Court had not landed one blow on Frank. Frank splashed water from the trough on his face and stepped back onto the boardwalk, walking up to the Diamond 45 foreman.
I make my point, Langford.
Yeah, I reckon you did, Morgan. But it ain't gonna be forgotten no time soon.
Never forget it. And be sure to tell your boss about it. I'll do the same damn thing to him if his actions deserve it.
You're a fool, Morgan. You can't fight every rancher on the north end of the valleys.
You want to bet your life on that?
Son of a bitch. When do you boys get a buckboard from a livery to haul Court back to the ranch?
You want me to get Doc Everett to look at him before we do?
No. I don't want that mean-mouthed bastard to look at him. We'll get Doc Woods.
Frank stood on the boardwalk and listened to the Diamond 45 hands talk, all the while flexing his fingers to help keep them from stiffening up. They would be sore from the pounding against Court's face, but nothing was broken. He would soak both hands in hot water and salt later on. He glanced up and across the street at the crowd gathered on the boardwalk, Julie and Shelley among them. Frank started to step off the boardwalk and walk across to them.
I'll kill you for this. That's a promise.
And if he don't, I will.
Shut up, Dick. We'll get our evens for long, you can bet on that.
I'll sure be around. You boys best keep in mind what I said about staying off my property and the Wilson property.
Both of Court's eyes were almost swollen shut, but Frank could see the hate shining through the swelling.
I'll have to kill him someday.
Doc Everett strolled up and glanced at Court, then over at Langford.
You want me to take a look at him, Wells?
I want you to keep your damn hands off him.
With pleasure. Maybe the community'll get lucky and he'll die.
You're a mean bastard, Doc.
I'm a realist.
Huh?
Never mind. It would take the rest of the day trying to explain it to you.
Doc looked at Frank.
Heard you were back in town. Julie told me moments before the fight. She seems quite fond of you.
She's a nice lady.
Yes, that she is. I hope your intentions are honorable.
They are.
Are you unscathed after this brief battle?
I know what that means, Doc. Yes, I'm fine.
Now that's good to hear. Oddly enough, I believe you.
Doc Everett stuck the stub of a cigar into his mouth and walked away.
Here comes Luke with the buckboard. Looks like he put some hay in the back to soften the ride.
Wells, Davis, and the others loaded Court into the buckboard, and the Diamond 45 hands rode out, once they had all given Frank dirty looks. Frank walked across the street to stand beside Julie and Shelley.
Are you all right?
Oh, yeah.
What was all that fighting about?
I got upset about some ugly comments he made about you.
I won't ask what they were.
Best you don't.
Your hands look swollen.
I might, but they'll be all right. I'll heat water and soak them this afternoon.
You'll stop by the house and I'll heat water for you.
Yes'm.
Once Frank outlined for the builders what he wanted, he left them to their sawing, hammering, nailing, and started rounding up what was left of the cattle. Jefferson didn't register any brand, so Frank marked them with his own brand, one he had registered at the county seat after checking the Montana brand book. His was an F-bar-M. He branded Julie's cattle with a J-bar-W. It was midsummer, too late to do anything with what was left of Jefferson's unattended and weed-choked beet and potato crop, and too late to plant his own. So Frank just left it alone. The wheat crop looked good. He made arrangements with another farmer to bring that in when it was time, for shares of whatever the crop brought. For the most part, the ranchers on the north side of the crossroads stayed in their part of the multi-connecting valleys. Frank never went to the town of hell. He didn't want to go. He didn't think he'd be too welcome there. Court recovered from his beating, at least physically, but the hand talked daily about his hatred of Frank Morgan, how someday he'd kill him. Frank felt someday, probably sooner than later, he'd face Court in a showdown. On a hot midsummer day, Frank was taking a break relaxing under the shade of trees by the banks of a creek. The creek was one of the dividing lines between his property and the Wilson property. Horse wandered down to the creek for a drink. Wolf was back at the home site, watching the carpenters at work. Frank heard the sound of horses, a couple of them, seeming to come from different directions. He perked up, watching and listening. The first horse he saw was Katie's paint pony. Julie said the girl rode nearly every day after her chores, staying away for hours at a time.
Now where is she going?
A heartbeat later, Frank spotted the other rider.
Oh, hell.
Frank recognized the second rider, Donnie Bullard, son of the owner of the Diamond 45 spread. Frank watched the boy and girl meet, then ride off into a stand of timber.
Young love.
Julie forbid her daughter to have anything to do with Donnie, but as Frank recalled, she had sounded pretty discouraged when she told him.
I might as well be talking to a stump. She's going to do what she wants to do. Phil Jr. is seeing Betty Lou Gilmore whenever both of them can slip away. Oh, it's a big mess.
What do the ranchers have to say about it?
The same thing I say, but their kids are just as hard-headed.
Are they, doing anything? You know what I mean.
I don't know. I rather doubt it. They're still awfully young to be thinking about, you know, that.
They're all about 15, aren't they?
Yes.
That's old enough. How old were you when you married Philip?
15.
Enough said, I reckon.
Oh, I'll chain her to the bed.
I think I'd pick another object to chain her to.
You're awful, Frank.
Frank stared at the stand of timber, wondering what the kids were doing in there. Then he decided he really didn't want to know. He slipped down to the creek and swung into the saddle, heading back to his house.
Come on, horse. Let's give him some privacy.
If the kids were doing what comes naturally, Frank hoped they were being careful about it. Frank returned to his homestead and a passel of local gossip from the workers.
I seen that damn snooty Betty Lou Gilmore about 2 hours ago, riding that fancy horse of hern.
Where?
I was up to the crossroads, directing a wagon load of lumber here. I seen her cross the road, heading south.
All them kids is up to no good. When one of them girls gets in a family way, it's gonna be real bad.
I don't believe they're doing anything but smooching.
I bet you believe bears don't do it in the woods, too.
Maybe if the kids of the ranchers and the farmers can get along, the adults might follow suit.
Well, the folks on this end of the valley would be happy to make peace, but we're not the ones hiring gunfighters and sending out night riders to burn and kill, Mr. Morgan. All we want to do is live in peace and raise our kids and crops.
He looked toward the southwest and his tanned face paled.
Oh, God, look!
Frank turned and looked. A huge cloud of smoke was visible, rising from a fire several miles away. Someone's wheat field was burning. He doubted it was an accident.
I'll check it out. Whoa, horse!
As Frank reached the field, he saw neighbors working a fire break, and the fire was nearly out. But the flames had destroyed the entire wheat field of a man named Clay. Frank rode up to the gathering of men and women and sat his saddle. There was no point in dismounting. There was nothing he could do. The farm families stood in silence and looked out over the ruined field. Clay leaned on his shovel.
That's it for me. I'm busted. Flat busted. The goddamn ranchers beat me.
Did anyone see who started it?
No.
Didn't see no one.
Don't start packing yet, Clay.
Why not? I don't even have the money to get through the winter, much less buy seed and equipment for next year. The fire got all my implements. They was down at the end where the fire started.
I'll stake you. And you work for me for the rest of the summer and fall. I'll pay good wages. Deal?
Why would you do that?
Because I wanna.
All right, Mr. Morgan. Deal.
I'm gonna do some checking. See if I can find anything about why this fire started. Or who started it. I'll be back.
He looked at the woman standing beside Clay and smiled.
I'd appreciate a pot of coffee when I get back, ma'am.
It'll sure be ready, Mr. Morgan.
Frank found a number of hoof prints and an empty kerosene can tossed in a ditch near where the fire started. He followed the tracks for a time, all the way back to the river that marked the boundary of one side of the valley. Frank did not cross the small river. He saw enough to know the fire was deliberate. But he had no proof who started it or who paid to have it started. He knew from carefully checking the hoof prints at least one of the riders was part of the group that killed the Jefferson family a few months back.
Getting bolder, striking in broad daylight.
What'd you find, Mr. Morgan?
Riders headed back to the north end of the valley. I didn't follow them.
They might have been waiting in ambush.
I thought about that. But even if I caught up with them, I had no proof linking them to the fire. And I'm not the law.
You could be.
Forget that. My days of toting a badge are over.
Mrs. Clay poured Frank a cup of fresh brewed coffee, and he took it.
Thank you, ma'am. Smells wonderful.
Julie Wilson came rattling up in a buckboard, Shelley on the seat beside her. Julie walked over to Mrs. Clay, and the two women hugged each other, while the other farmers' wives gathered around. The men grouped together away from the women.
You men have got to arm yourselves. You got to be ready and willing to use those guns. If you don't, you're going to lose everything you have, including your lives.
We're farmers, Mr. Morgan, not gunfighters.
Y'all hunt, don't you?
The men all solemnly nodded.
Then y'all know how to use guns. That's half the battle.
I never took a man's life. I don't know if I could shoot a man.
By God, I could. And you men are going to teach us how to shoot.
Now, Francis.
Don't you now Francis me, Daniel. I mean it.
All right, settle down, Francis.
Daniel looked at Frank.
I got a rifle and a shotgun.
Get a pistol, too. All you men get a pistol and learn how to use it. Get used to carrying it around.
No point in notifying Sheriff Wilcox about this. He's in Trainer's pocket. And so is Judge Broadhurst.
For a fact, we're all alone in this fight.
We've got each other, Josh.
That's right.
Edna Clay put an arm around her husband's waist.
We sure do.
All right, Edna. I'll teach you how to use a rifle.
And a pistol.
It's a start. Once the ranchers learn we've gotten organized and will fight, they might back off.
They're not going to back off, Mr. Morgan. They'll never back off until they've run us out or killed us all. But this way, well, we'll go down fighting. Like grown-up men and women.
Don't start talking about defeat. I don't like to lose. And we're not gonna lose this fight.
Yeah, but some of us are gonna get hurt or killed. Now that's a hard fact of the matter. And I got a whole house full of young'uns to think about. I'm getting out of here. There's land plenty elsewheres. I ain't dying for no piece of dirt.
I figured you'd quit, Jameson. You ain't done nothing except in gripe and moan since you got here.
Be that as it may, I'm sure packing up and leaving. I'll be gone in the morning.
What about your land and the home you built? How much you own and where is it?
I got me a section down by the creek over yonder. Ain't much of a house, but it's good land.
All right. I'll give you a fair price for it. At least enough to get you going and start it elsewhere. That is, if you really got a mind to go. But I wish you'd stay and join us in the fight.
It ain't my fight, Mr. Morgan. Not no more. I'm done.
Frank studied Jameson's face. The man wore the mark of a loser. Frank suspected Jameson would drift until his dying day, never being content anywhere.
All right, Jameson. I'll ride over to your place now, look it over, and we'll settle on a price. I'll have the papers drawn up in the morning and pay you then. That all right with you?
You gonna bring the money to me, or do I have to meet you in town to do it?
We'll have to meet at the bank to sign papers.
I'll be there when it opens.
No one's going to miss him, Mr. Morgan. You'll see why when you ride over to his place. Ranchers have a word for people like Jameson. They call them rawhiders.
I suspected as much. And it's Frank. Not Mr. Morgan.
All right, Frank. My name is Harry.
I'll see you in the morning, Harry. Thanks for the coffee, Mrs. Clay. It was delicious.
It's Edna, please.
Frank smiled and tipped his hat. He waved at Julie, then rode off after Jameson.
He's nothing like the articles I've read about him and the stories I've heard. He's a nice man.
Yes, he is. He's good with kids, and he's very well-read.
He's still a gunfighter. He's gonna get a lot of us hurt or killed.
Oh, shut up, Maynard. Frank's all right. The man who's working over at his place say he's a nice fella.
I don't like him. And nothing you nor nobody else can say is gonna change that.
Fine, Maynard. You're entitled to your opinion. But you're wrong about Frank Morgan.
Doubt it.
Are you going to join us in arming ourselves?
I'm armed. Got me a good rifle, a good shotgun, and a pistol. I'll defend myself when the time comes.
Then go on home to Louise, Maynard. If you're not gonna join us, you can stand alone.
I'll do that. Hell with y'all.
Maynard stalked over to his horse and rode away, his back stiff with anger.
What brought all that on, you reckon?
Who knows? Maynard's always been a strange duck.
Yeah, for a fact. All right, folks. I reckon I've got me a new job. And we've all got us a good neighbor.
Jameson's house had been nothing but a shack. There were half a dozen kids, ranging in age from just walking to mid-teens. Mrs. Jameson looked worn out. Frank checked Jameson's equipment and found it ill-kept and practically worthless. But the 640 acres Jameson owned were prime farmland with good water and drainage. Frank told Jameson he'd see him in town in the morning and headed back to his place. The workmen were gone for the day. The house was just about finished, with most of the remaining work to be done on the outside. Frank rubbed down horse and turned him into the corral for a time. The new barn was completed, and Frank forked hay into horse's stall, put some grain into the feed box, then went into his house. He fed Wolf and fixed a pot of coffee, filled a cup, and went out onto the front porch to sit for a time, enjoying the quiet of late afternoon. He was rolling a cigarette just as Wolf came out and lay down beside his chair.
We're getting to be regular land barons, Wolf. Believe we might have actually found us a home. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? What do you think about that?
Wolf looked up at him for a few seconds, then went back to sleep.
I thought that would impress you. Do I want to spend the rest of my life here? Well, why not? The people, most of them anyway, are nice. Don't really give a damn about my past. And there is that nice young widow to think about, too.
Thinking of Julie filled Frank with a warm, comfortable feeling. It surprised him. He thought he was finished with such emotions, but there it was. The difference in their ages of 10 years or so was not that great. Nothing that couldn't be overcome. But could Frank ever successfully put his past behind him? There were still a lot of young punks looking for a killing reputation, and they would find him. They always did. Then he would have to kill again, or be killed.
Damn. It ain't easy being Frank Morgan.
Frank went inside and lit a lamp. He'd read for a time, then go to bed. He pulled out a book of poems written by a fellow named Poe. Poe wrote from a dark, lonely mind.
It was many and many a year ago, in a kingdom by the sea.
Frank refilled his coffee cup and read about the beautiful Annabel Lee. Frank met Jameson in town the following morning and told him how much he would give him for the land after checking to see the title was free and clear. Jameson took the offer and signed the papers. Frank paid him in cash. The land was his.
When are you planning on pulling out?
Right now. Everything we're taking is in the wagons already.
Where will you go?
California. I hear it's a land of plenty.
Banker Simmons strode up to Frank. The two men watched the sorry spectacle of the Jameson clan heading to their next promised land.
Losers. The whole woebegone lot of them.
I reckon you're right, John. But I can't help but feel sorry for them.
Well, you'd be wasting your time and your sympathies, Frank. Nearly everyone in this end of the valley helped that family at one time or another. I think they got used to people helping them long before they arrived here.
Frank watched as a carriage came rolling onto the main street, followed by a couple of mounted men. Their horses wore the Snake brand.
Mrs. Viola Traynor. She comes to this end of the valley about once every 2 or 3 months.
To shop?
In a manner of speaking. She's addicted to laudanum. Sam Bickman at the apothecary shop gets it for her. She buys it a case at a time.
She can't get it in hell?
Well, the colonel won't allow the druggist there to sell it to her. So she comes over here and buys it.
Surely he knows that.
Oh, he knows it, but he can't do much of anything about it. Viola has money of her own. She keeps some of it in my bank.
Who are those riders with her?
Well, the one with the fancy vest is her baby boy, Julian, called Jules. He's about 19, I believe. He's a cruel bastard. There's a real twisted streak in that young man. The other rider is Viola's personal bodyguard, Ortiz.
The Nogales gunfighter. Haven't seen or heard anything about him in years. I wondered what became of him.
Trainer hired him. I guess, 6 or 7 years ago. Wherever you see Viola, you'll see Ortiz.
Anyone crossed him in that time?
2 men I know of. Right out there in that street in front of us. They didn't have a prayer when it came time to draw. He's fast, Frank. He's so fast, it's scary.
I know. Mutual respect is just one of the reasons we've avoided each other over the years.
What are some of the others?
Another is both of us know if it comes down to a showdown, we'll both take some lead. I got shot in the shoulder last year. I don't heal as fast as I used to.
Simmons went into the bank, and Frank walked across the street to the cafe for a cup of coffee and a plate of biscuits, if they had any left from the breakfast crowd.
Morgan!
Frank turned to face Court, the Diamond 45 hand, standing about 30 feet away.
I told you I'd kill you someday, Morgan! Today is that day!
Don't be a fool.
Are you ready, Morgan?
No, I'm not. I don't want to kill you. The remarks you made about the lady were out of line, and you got a beating for it. It was deserved, and you know it.
Out of the corner of his eye, Frank saw Ortiz and Jules' trainer step out onto the boardwalk to stand and watch. The Mexican gun hand was staring and listening intently.
I bet Court kills him, Ortiz.
Don't be a fool when you bet, boy.
I can see gray in his hair.
Gray in my hair, too, boy. The business we're in grays a man's hair quickly.
Frank pulled all his attention back to Court. He felt calm spread over him. Any tenseness left him. He stood quite still and faced the angry 45 hand. Frank's right hand hung near the butt of his peacemaker.
What's it take to make you pull on me, Morgan?
I'm not going to start this, Court. I don't want to kill you. Why don't you just turn around, get on your horse, and ride out of here?
I ain't afeard of you, Morgan.
Never said you were.
By God, I think you've lost your speed. I think age done caught up with you and you're doing nothing except living a big bluff.
I don't care what you think, Court.
You are a damn clodhopping piece of sheep dip. Don't you laugh at me, Morgan.
I can't help it, Court. What you said struck me as funny.
Huh?
You eat potatoes, corn, and such, Court.
Do I do what?
Do you eat corn, potatoes, beans, and such?
Well, hell yes I do!
Where do you think it comes from, Court?
Oh, how the hell do I know?
Several of the men on the boardwalk smiled as they realized where Frank was going with his questioning. Ortiz smiled as he rolled a cigarette. He felt no rancor toward Frank Morgan. Ortiz's job was to protect Mrs. Traynor. He took no part in any night riding.
They come from farmers, Court. Think about it.
What the hell are you talking about?
I'm talking about what you eat, Court, and where it comes from.
What damn business is it of yours what I eat, Morgan? I think you turned loony on me.
I'm trying to save your life, that's all.
Come on now, you gonna fight me?
Not unless you force me to do it.
All right, Morgan. I'm forcing you. Pull iron, you bastard.
After you, Court.
You stupid ass chicken shit. Dirty, lily-livered coward of a reb.
Frank stood calm, unmoving, in the center of the street.
Draw on me, Morgan! God damn it, you! Draw iron!
Ortiz was highly amused as he watched the drama in the street turn into a dark comedy.
Morgan's yellow.
No, boy. He is a very smart man who doesn't want to kill anyone. Believe me, I know the feeling well.
All right, Morgan. You're forcing me to call your hand.
I wish you wouldn't, Court.
Well, I ain't got a choice in the matter. I ain't gonna stand here and have you make a fool of me.
You're doing a fine job all by yourself.
What? I ain't doing no such of a thing, neither.
I think it's over, boy.
What do you mean?
I just have a feeling, that's all. It's something you develop after a few years in this business.
I'm gonna walk away now, Court. If you shoot me, it'll be in the back. Are you a back shooter?
Hell no, I ain't no back shooter.
Then you go back to the ranch and cool down.
Morgan! You gotta fight me!
Why, Court?
Why? Because I done made up my mind to, that's why!
Then change your mind.
Frank turned his back and walked the rest of the way across the street, stepping up on the boardwalk.
Howdy, Ortiz. Hadn't seen you in so long I didn't recognize you at first.
Morgan, you're looking fit?
What's Court doing?
He's walking away, heading for the saloon, I think.
Jules' trainer walked away too, disappointed there was no gunplay.
Good. I didn't want to have to kill him.
I know the feeling, Morgan. Only too well.
I'm farming and running a little ranch now.
So I heard. Think you can really settle down after all these years.
Gonna give it a good try.
I wish you luck.
I appreciate that.
There was not much else for the two gunfighters to talk about. They weren't friends, so Frank stepped into the cafe for a cup of coffee. Dr. Everett was sitting alone at a table, a pot of coffee in front of him. He waved Frank over to join him.
You could have easily killed that cowboy, Frank.
Didn't want to kill him, Doc. It'd suit me just fine to never draw on another man.
The reluctant gunfighter. I guess some of the articles I've read about you are true.
Which ones are those? Must have missed them.
The ones that say you were forced to kill a man when you were just a boy, and from that moment on the title gunfighter was nothing you wanted.
That's true, Doc. I was just a kid.
You're buying a lot of land, Frank. You really gonna try and settle down in this area?
Gonna try.
I hope you make it. How are you and Miss Julie getting on? Tell me to go to hell if you think I'm getting too personal.
We're taking it slow, Doc. Just one step at a time.
Those kids of hers giving you any trouble?
I know where this is going. And no, they mind quite well. Except when it comes to their puppy love.
It might not be puppy love, Frank. Have you thought about that?
I try not to think about it at all.
A nice, safe answer.
There's some man here from over Butte Way. Says he's come to kill Frank Morgan.
What's his name?
Rob something or other.
Damn. Twice in one day is too much.
You know this person, Frank?
He's a punk kid who thinks he's a gun slick. Ran into him in Butte. Thought it was over between us. Where's the .45 hand I just talked out of a gunfight?
He got his horse and rode out of town.
At least I got him going home alive.
Frank slipped the leather thong off the hammer of his peacemaker.
I don't think I'll be able to talk Rob out of a fight.
Morgan! Get out here in the street and face me! Your time has come!
Frank picked up his coffee mug and took a long pull.
That's real good coffee. Doc, you go out the back way. Tell Marshal Handlin to stay out of this. This kid's kill crazy, I'm thinking.
Handlin's out of town, Frank. He left early this morning heading back east. One of his kids is near death. Hell, he might be dead by now.
Might as well get this over.
A crowd is gathering on the boardwalks.
I see him. Well, folks, it's time for the show.